Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Francis Boyle. Francis is a distinguished University of Illinois law professor. He's an activist. He's an internationally recognized expert on international law and human rights. He's written many, many books. I remember two that I read and I wrote some about, a little bit more than some. I certainly wrote about them. It's been a while. One was Palestine, Palestinians, and International Law, and the other was Biowarfare and Terrorism. I have other books of Francis on my shelf that I've read, and he has a new one out by Clarity Press. It's called Destroying Libya and World Order, the three-decade U.S. campaign to reverse the Gaddafi revolution. Francis, welcome. I guess not only to reverse the Gaddafi revolution, but literally to destroy the entire country.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much for having me on, and my best to your listening audience. Yes, we heard the testimony yesterday by Brennan supporting murdering United States citizens, and the members of the United States Senate fawning all over him. It really seriously raises the question of, are we any more living in a democracy with a constitution and a rule of law? Are we living in a little presidential dictatorship where Obama can literally murder U.S. citizens whenever he wants? By comparison, Stephen, Paul or Saul of Tarsus was a Roman citizen, and when he was on trial for his life, he exercised his right to be tried in the court of the emperor. And so we have Paul Saul's epistles from Asia all the way to Rome as he's being transported there for trial. And then apparently he disappears somewhere in the persecution by Nero. Well, I'm afraid that's what we're dealing with now. I did read the white paper released by the Obama administration based on the so-called legal opinion written by Letterman of Georgetown Law School and Barron of Harvard Law School, and publicly approved by Coe, now of Yale Law School, and Holder, who gave a speech at Northwestern Law School and twice received standing ovations there. It shows you the absolute corruption of elite legal institutions that they applaud and hire and promote and pay for. Law professors advocating the murder of United States citizens. I'm not going to go through all the sophistry of this memo. It's just as bad as the Bush torture memos. But if you read it, it's very clear the purpose of this memo is exactly like the Bush torture memos. It is not a legitimate legal argument one way or the other. Rather, the lawyers who drafted this, Barron, Lederman, and I take it Coe was in on it too, were trying to concoct in advance a legal defense for Obama and Brennan and the CIA for murdering United States citizens, known as advice of counsel. Namely that, well, we didn't murder U.S. citizens because our lawyers told us we could do it, and therefore we did not have the requisite criminal intent. And if you read through carefully the memo, they are very concerned about the federal statute that specifically makes it a crime for anyone here in the United States to murder a United States citizen abroad. And there is no exception in that statute at all, unlike a statute for a federal statute conspiracy to murder citizens abroad that the charlatan Congress put an exception there for anti-terrorist operations. So that is what they are worried about. And this memo and the still secret memo upon which it is based is simply trying to concoct a legal argument, a legal defense for Obama and the rest of them, exactly what the Bush Jr. lawyers did on torture. So they're no better, no worse than the Bush Jr. lawyers, and indeed they are all, these lawyers who wrote this, are part of a criminal conspiracy to murder United States citizens. Let me make that very clear.
Francis, they get well paid to literally turn the law, inviolable law, international law, constitutional law, U.S. statute law, they turn it on its head, on their head, and they get big paydays for doing this stuff. Earlier, Francis, I wrote about Obama's kill list, his disposition matrix. This morning, was it this morning? I get confused what day I put out articles. I think it was this morning. It was yesterday. An article.
Stephen, what you know? This is just as bad as the Nazi lawyers working for Hitler and his Ministry of Justice, who, by the way, were put on trial after World War II at one of the related Nuremberg prosecutions called the Justices case, and were convicted. These people are giving the green light legally to murdering U.S. citizens. As for Obama, he was after me at Harvard Law School and was a lecturer at the University of Chicago Law School, so he knows better. Bush, of course, was not a lawyer. So I guess he could say, well, my lawyers told me I could torture, so I tortured. Whereas Obama is a lawyer and taught law, and so he's going to have a hard time making that type of defense, which I'm sure we will go after Obama when we can. Sure, a president can be, a sitting president can be impeached for murder. That's one thing very clear from the records if you study the history of impeachment and the impeachment clause. A sitting president can be impeached for murder, and he should be impeached for murdering United States citizens. And he should be impeached now. And the Republicans control the House. So where are the Republicans here? They can easily introduce a bill of impeachment over this. And they can have hearings, and they can impeach him, and he should be impeached, and then ship that off to the Senate. Now, I guess the Democrats control the Senate, but when you know, the one thing we learned from the impeachment of President Johnson and all, the original President Johnson after Nixon, and then after the impeachment of proceedings against Nixon, once you start that impeachment ball rolling, you really have no idea what's going to happen. So I think we really need to pressure the members of U.S. House of Representatives, and especially the Republicans, because the Democrats are all spineless between you and me. Pressure the Republicans, put in a bill of impeachment immediately, and have the House impeach him summarily before he murders more United States citizens. And even yesterday in the testimony, Brennan refused to rule out murdering U.S. citizens in the United States. Although if you read the memo, it says it would not be applied in the United States. But we know for a fact that it was Obama who insisted that the National Defense Authorization Act be applied to United States citizens here in the United States. That was not the way it was originally drafted by Congress. Indeed, Senator Levin publicly stated Obama insisted that the NDAA be applied to United States citizens. And under the NDAA, basically, the military can pick up anyone they want here in the United States and disappear them. Extraordinary rendition, turn them over to some other state to be tortured, And again, it appears from Brennan's testimony that's what's going on. They're outsourcing the torture to someone else. So I regret to say, Stephen, this is what is confronting us. And you were right in the you're posing the problem today as we live here in America. It's a very sad day and a very dangerous day.
It really is, Francis. If that isn't the definition of tyranny, I don't know what is. It really is shocking. I do want to talk about your book. I've written about all this stuff that you have mentioned. And my new article tomorrow, my second one on Brennan, the other one was extrajudicial killings, official U.S. policy to, yesterday. And the one going out tomorrow is called What did I title it? Whitewashing Extrajudicial Killing. And I go over the Brennan hearing, and I say the Senate Intelligence Committee members didn't lay a glove on him.
No, on purpose. I mean, either the senators are afraid of the CIA because they know the CIA runs the country, or else the CIA, FBI, NSA have dirt on them that they know is there. For example, Feinstein, the chair, who slobbered all over Brennan. We know for a fact she's worth $45 million, and we know for a fact that her husband is involved in all sorts of financial defalcations. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was made pretty clear to Feinstein that she better go along with this. And given the opulent wealth of everyone in the Senate, the FBI, CIA, NSA, I'm sure has dirt on all of them. So we're not going to see the Senate at all stand up for anything.
Oh, absolutely not. It's been a long time, Francis, but I can remember writing about J. Edgar, I almost called him Herbert Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, when he ran the FBI, and he had dirt on all kinds of people. They didn't dare lay a glove on him. He could come up with all these shocking facts about Lyndon Johnson or anybody else and just lay them low. I forget when J. Edgar term expired, but he was around for a long time. But let's do this. I mean, this is a very important subject that we're talking about. And at the same time, I want people to know about your book. Talk about destroying Libya and world order.
Right. Well, as you know, this whole Obama war against Libya was a total fraud. They decided, Obama, the CIA, the Pentagon, that, you know, the time had come to steal Libya's oil and gas. It was on the list. If you go back and read Wesley Clark's book, that right after 9/11, under Wolfowitz, who talked about ending states, they drew up a list of seven Muslim states to destroy, and Libya was on the list. So they began, going down the list in accordance with targets of opportunity, Afghanistan, Iraq. And Libya was on the list, and they, obviously there were, some good faith protests there in Benghazi. Gaddafi made some statements that, yes, were unacceptable, but then they simply used that as a pretext to launch a pre-existing plan to take over Libya. If you look at the war plan, the game plan on Libya, as I point out in my book, it's exactly the same as what they used against Serbia, what the Clinton people used against Serbia in 1999 in order to steal Kosovo. The same thing, same plan, same everything, same arguments, only instead of humanitarian intervention, they shifted the rhetoric, responsibility to protect. But it's the same thing. Indeed, I have a whole chapter in there demolishing the responsibility to protect doctrine as antithetical to international law, just as humanitarian intervention was. And I just saw a report that Berlusconi has stated that, yes, the French President Sarkozy pushed the war in order to steal Libya's oil. So that's what it was all about. But as I point out in my book, this plan goes back actually to the start of the Reagan administration in 1981. The first covert operation Reagan ever authorized was a plan to overthrow Gaddafi. And it, and that that has been standing operative U.S. policy since at least 1981. The Carter administration did at least try to defuse disagreements with Libya. And so my book documents the entire history starting in 1981 up to the 2011 sham war, and then the current developments. From my perspective as someone who tried to stop all this, I began to serve as advice and counsel to Libya and try to stop this, to help them, right after Reagan began attacking them. And I go through the entire history of U.S. military operations against Libya and attacks on Libya and attempts to overthrow Gaddafi and to murder him. And again, all because they had this enormous pool of oil and gas. And indeed, I spent, back in the 1980s, I spent a sum total of a month over there when all American academics refused to go because they were too afraid. I went over there all by myself to make an assessment on my own. And it was clear to me Libya was sitting on this enormous quantity of oil and gas, and the Libyans could not really defend themselves. That it was very clear to me all along, and unfortunately, the U.S. government decided the time had come to steal that oil and gas. So that's, you know, what we're dealing with today, and the book picks up the story in 1981, although Carter was no saint either. He basically gave a green light to Sadat to invade Libya in 1977. The Libyans did defend themselves there. So the story extends that, you know, basically from there on up until today. Libya is destroyed and shattered as a state. People make fun of Gaddafi and this, that, and the other thing, but you know he threw out the United States and Britain that had military bases in there from World War II. He threw out the U.S. UK oil companies, nationalized them, and they were stealing the Libyan people blind. And then he used this enormous oil wealth to, for the benefit of the Libyan people. They had the highest standard of living in Africa, and indeed, when I first went over there in 1985, you know, they had a standard of living comparable to what you'd find in Greece or some of the southern Mediterranean countries. And I go through all that in the book. So, you know, it was clear for, and Gaddafi, you know, he wouldn't do what we told him to do. So it was very clear that he had to be taken out, and there's the continuity of trying to do this, starting with Reagan, and then Bush Sr., and then Clinton, and then Bush Jr., and finally Obama doing it. So I have you know, literally the whole history of 30 years there. And then I was about to send this to the printer when France invaded Mali. So I had to write, junk my old conclusion, write a new one, just pointing out what a joke and a fraud it is that France is over there to promote democracy and human rights in West Africa. And I'm French-American. You know, my mother's family, we've traced all the way back to Paris in the early 19th century. I'm very proud of that, the French Revolution. But France has never had anything at all to do with liberté, égalité, fraternité in Africa. I mean, it's hard to take any of that seriously. It's clear if you look at what's happened in Mali, France was operating in accordance with a war plan that had been drafted and approved by NATO. France is now part of the integrated NATO command. and approved by AFRICOM and you know, by the United States government. They France deployed and threw into combat a 4,000 soldier expeditionary force with all their heavy weapons, equipment, and supplies in 3 weeks and conquered northern Mali. It's reminiscent of Rommel's Africa Corps. Well, you can't do that unless you have a war plan, and the war plan had been given the green light several weeks ago, because you know, you have to ship all those troops and equipment down right now to the Ivory Coast, because Mali's landlocked. So it's all landing has landed at the Ivory Coast on the port there. And it's quite interesting, of course, that last year France got involved there in the dispute in the Ivory Coast, in the dispute they had over an election, and it put their own guy in power, Ouattara. So, you know, I don't think that's a coincidence either. So what we're seeing now, Libya was the start of the recolonization of Africa by the white racist Western colonial imperial powers. It's just like the Berlin Conference all over again, 1884, 1885. And there's Libya, and Mali is number two. France just landed special forces in Niger to grab their uranium mines, which fuel the French nuclear power industry, 70% of their power, and their genocidal nuclear weapons complex. And they didn't even bother to consult the Nigerois government. They just sent their special forces in there to grab the uranium mines. You know, Mali has uranium, gold, and probably substantial quantities of oil and gas. It's due south of Algeria. So, that, you know, this has nothing to do with democracy, human rights, fighting terrorism, or anything like that. This is the French Empire back. The Americans are back. The British are now in Mali. And they're doing the exact same thing to Syria as well. It's like the Sykes-Picot Agreement, 1916, where the British and the French carved up the Levant. This is Lebanon's being completely destabilized. The Ottoman Empire is back. They're in on it too. So it's sort of like the Empire's Strike Back. You know, that Western colonial imperialism de jure was booted out, but as we know, they set up their comprador classes. Well, now they've decided that's not good enough, and they now all want back directly under their own troops, under their own direct control. So this is what we're seeing unfold now in North Africa and the Middle East. Somalia the same way, too. Somalia has enormous quantities of oil and gas, and we had the Ethiopians invade there. There are proxies cobbled together, this so-called African Union force. But it's, you know, and our dictator Museveni there in Uganda, he's our guy. He's sort of the core of that. Then we encourage Kenya to invade, illegally invade Somalia and destabilized Kenya. But Somalia, it was even before when Bush Sr. invaded Somalia, claiming he was going over there to feed poor, starving black people, which was a joke. What about poor, starving black people here in America? But in any event, before that invasion, Somalia had basically been carved up between four U.S. oil companies because there was enormous quantities of oil and gas there. So, you know, we can say democracy, human rights, terrorism, all we want, but it's clear this is the new scramble for the abundant natural resources of Africa, the Congo Civil War. Again, Uganda and Rwanda, Kagame, our guy. Rwanda's in there as our proxy in Eastern Congo, and death and destruction there to millions of people. we're right now looting Africa. So the U.S. empire abroad must have a U.S. police state at home. That's for sure. And that is what we have now. Indeed, ask yourself, why did the NDAA all of a sudden appear out of nowhere in Congress? It was very simple. It had nothing to do with al-Qaeda. Indeed, the government's admitted that at best there might be, you know, maybe 100, 200 al-Qaeda guys running around there somewhere in the mountains of Pakistan or Afghanistan. No, it was the Occupy Wall Street movement. When Occupy Wall Street surfaced there at Wall Street and all over the country, it shook up the financial power elite who run this country. And they concluded they were a threat. This was a threat, and they were at risk. And so all of a sudden, you get the National Defense Authorization Act appearing in Congress and Obama insisting it apply to United States citizens. So now we're going to be having drones flying all over the country, thanks to Obama and Congress. Why are the drones going to be flying all over the country? To spy on the American people. And soon they will be arming these drones. That's the next step. We already know that in the drone training, of armed drone training, they practice on cars by United States citizens driving down streets. So we're going to have drones spying on us, and soon they're going to be arming those drones. And Obama then will be, as he murders U.S. citizens abroad after his weekly terror session there, terror meeting with Brennan on Tuesday, he'll soon start targeting those drones on American citizens. Yes.
Francis, it's really shocking what's going on. Anybody who listens to this program and others like it, I think, have a pretty good understanding of the things going on at home and abroad, but still too many people don't. And of those who do or know enough, they're so dismissive, they're so concerned about other things in their lives. Some are very important, some are trivial, but this is awfully big stuff. We didn't grow up, America was never beautiful. I use that expression often, but the things going on today, if I look back enough years or decades, I simply can't imagine that this stuff would be going on. We remember Vietnam. I remember Korea. I was lucky not to be in Korea. I'm old enough to remember World War II. But now there's perpetual multiple wars, and a war against people at home. And this is what our government does. And it doesn't matter whether you've got a Republican in charge or a Democrat in charge. I mean, literally, Obama exceeded the worst of George Bush, and he gets away with it because he's a con man. He's got half the country convinced that he's a good guy, even though he's committed such heinous crimes, and he continues doing it, and he's got four more years. I just wonder, another line I use, Francis, I wonder if humanity can survive another 4 years.
Yeah, and remember after Obama beat Romney, he boasted, quote, the best is yet to come, unquote. So heaven help us all.
Oh,
you're right,
help us all,
Obama's worse than Bush in two grounds constitutionally. One, even Bush did not arrogate him to himself the right to murder U.S. citizens.
True.
And two, when Bush went to war against Iraq, he at least fraudulently procured consent from Congress. When Obama went to war against Libya, he didn't even bother.
He just did it. Francis, we're out of time. I've got to cut you off. It pains me to do it. Many, many thanks, Francis. I look forward to getting you back again. And I'll remind my listeners, join us Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit. Thanks, Francis.